This cassette is prepared and presented by The Church of God International, sponsor of the Armor of God radio broadcast and telecast.
I have something I want you to consider today because it is it's interesting to realize that within families there arise difficulties. Any family. We know some of the more prominent, famous ones. If I mentioned the Kennedy name to you, you'd say, oh yeah, of course. We know about that family. Or if I mentioned the DuPonts, they got some problems over there too. And the Vanderbilts, these are all people with lots of money, and you'd think, how could they ever have a problem? But they do. In fact, sometimes we read the Bible and we recognize the great families that are listed there, and we think, my, those are outstanding families. I mean, for instance, if you looked at the book of Hebrews in the 11th chapter, and we were to look down through the 11th chapter, sometimes called the Hall of Faith, the chapter of faith where so many names are given of individuals who reached a prominence in God's eyes, and he declared that they were people of faith. For instance, in verse 8, Abraham is described this way: by faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Boy, that's faith. To be told to go somewhere, you pack up and go, not knowing where you're going. And so we say, well, I don't know if I could do that like Abraham. And so Abraham stands so tall, looms so large above us. And then we follow on down and we see in verse 11, Sarah mentioned, after her name was changed from Sarai, and Sarah means princess. It says, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him, that is God, faithful, who had promised. And there's Sarah. For the ladies in our midst to say, well, I don't know if I could have enacted that, because, I mean, Sarah was, she was 89 when she was impregnated, and 90 when she gave birth. I mean, all of you who've had children can think back to when you were young, full of vim, vigor, and vitality, and really kind of questioning whether you wanted to go through it then, but you did. But at the age of 90, need I say more? And we drop down to verse 17 to confirm this faithfulness of Abraham. It says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. Well, he wasn't his only son. We'll find out more about that in a moment. But, you know, Isaac had to give in and had to show some faithfulness too. He had to be cooperative with his dad. Look at verse 20. It says, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. Profound statement. The verse 21 says, by faith Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, and worshipped, leaning on a staff, on the top of his staff. Notice this, he says, when he was dying. But if we took a closer look at the life of Jacob before he was dying, we find some interesting stuff. In fact, if we were to take a look at all of the lives of these great paragons of virtue, we would find that there are indeed black sheep in the family. Well, how do you mean that, Mr. James? Black sheep in the family? Is this about race? Nope, has nothing to do with race. Black wool is as good as white wool. Ask Sam Donaldson. You know Sam Donaldson, the TV guy? He owns a whole flock of alpaca producing sheep over there in New Mexico, and got a nice governmental subsidy off of that deal, you know. So Sam, I know, would say that alpaca or those black sheep are pretty valuable. So it's not about race at all, but it's about family and about families that have black sheep. I mean, when I say the Kennedys to you, you say, well, let's see, who do we start with? Joseph Sr.? Oh, yeah, he was Gloria Swanson comes to mind somehow, and some stuff that he was doing over there with the king, the king's court in England. And then there was the alcohol thing, and, yeah, well, those Kennedys. And then, of course, Jack, you know, he never saw a woman he didn't like. And of course, Edward, same kind of story. Robert, loved, he had a good eye for the women, too. And so the Kennedys have this story. Now, we don't hear much about the ladies. We always think of them as stronger in the family. But you could go down any family of prominence. There's a lot of talk about the current president, President Clinton, and what he did or what he didn't do. And people stand back and say, ain't it awful? Boy, look at what this man has done. And all of the suspicion about it. Now, I'm not saying any of it is right. I'm just saying that don't look too far from your own family about what people are capable of doing. Because every family has black sheep in it. The ones we don't like to talk about are the ones who we kind of, we don't like them to have come to the family reunions, you know. Because they're going to act up and cut up in some kind of way. But let's take a look at Matthew, the first chapter, for a moment here. This is the genealogy of Jesus Christ. It's one of two listed in the Bible. Luke 3 also has one. And so we'll want to bear that in mind, that there are two genealogies. They differ in a bit of ways, but primarily they're the same ones. But I want to look at Matthew's, because Matthew does a summation here for us. He acknowledges, if you look at verse 17, that there are, from Abraham to David are 14 generations. And from David to the deportation or the captivity to Babylon, there are 14 generations. And then from the captivity to Babylon to the time of Christ, there's another 14 generations. And so altogether, we're talking about 42 generations. But let's go back up to verse 1 and start and read down through and see from whence Jesus Christ sprang and who are the members of his family. Wow. Verse 1. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And right away in verse 1, we have a distinction. The son of David, that's one segment of generations. And then from back there to the time of Abraham, that's another distinct set of generations. Beginning in verse 2, it says, oh, by the way, when you read about all of these begats, I'm reading in the New American Standard Translation, and so it just says born. But, you know, a lot of times when people read the Bible and they get to all the begats in the Old Testament, they just kind of eyes glaze over and they can't pronounce the names. And what in the world is all this in here for? And why bother with it? And you can get the same feeling in reading Matthew 1 through 16, first chapter 1 through 16. But there's some information in here that we must consider as we consider from whence Christ sprang. To Abraham was born Isaac. To Isaac, Jacob, and to Jacob, Judah, and his brothers. And to Judah was born Perez and Terah by Tamar, and to Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron, Ram. And to Ram was born Aminadab, and to Aminadab, Nashon, and to Nashon, Salmon, or Salmon. Now, so far, you may find somebody named Perez, and you might find somebody named Isaac and Jacob and Abraham, but some of these other names, unless people just make them up, yeah, you don't normally find these names anymore. Verse 5, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to was born Boaz by Rahab. Now, in the King James, you have a C in there, Rahab, but it's actually Rahab. Yep, that Rahab. We'll talk about her in a moment. And to Boaz was born Obed by Ruth. We'll talk about Ruth, too, here in a moment. And to Obed and Jesse, and to Jesse was born David the king. And to David was born Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. And to Solomon was born Rehoboam, and to Rehoboam, Abijah, to Abijah, Asa, and to Asa was born Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat, Joram, and to Joram, Uzziah. Very interesting name, because Uzziah shows up in the book of Isaiah. He was, in verse, chapter 6, it says, in the year that Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. That's Isaiah, the 6th chapter, and Uzziah was this individual that we read about here in this genealogy. And to Uzziah was born Jothan, and to Jothan Ahaz, and to Ahaz Hezekiah. And to Hezekiah, we all know who Hezekiah was, don't we? Wasn't he the one that got sick, turned his face to the wall, and prayed for some more time? God granted him 15 more years. That was Hezekiah. And to Hezekiah was born Manasseh. Manasseh is a familiar name. One of the sons of Joseph was named that, Ephraim and Manasseh. But as it happens in families, names are passed on or they resurface somewhere along the line in a family. And to Manasseh, Ammon, and to Ammon, Josiah. To Josiah was born Jeconiah, and to his brothers at the time of the deportation of the captivity to Babylon. And after the deportation to Babylon, To Jeconiah was born Shealtiel, and to Shealtiel, Zerubbabel, and to Zerubbabel was born Abiud, and to Abiud, Eliakim, and to Eliakim, Azor, and to Azor was born Zadok, and to Zadok, Akim. And I did this sermon in Houston, and I said, Akim, you mean like Akim Olajuwon? Yeah, because that name is just like Akim, and therefore there's one of those. And then to Akim was born Eliud, and to Eliud was born Eliezer, and to Eliezer, Mathol, and to Mathol, Jacob, and to Jacob was born Joseph, the husband of Mary, by whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Now, I read through all of those just to give you a feeling of the generations and names. If we just left it at that and said, well, okay, Joseph was supposed to be, or people talked about him being the father of Christ, but in fact it says here in verse 16, and Jacob was born Joseph, the husband of Mary, by whom, that is, by Mary, was born Jesus, who is called the Anointed One. Now, let's pause and think about the issue of black sheep in the family. In my family, the James brothers, there were five of them. There's only one remaining. And there was the sister. She was the oldest one. She's also deceased. But, boy, they were amazing. My first cousin, who died not too long ago, and who was a member of the Church of God International, having previously been in the Worldwide Church of God, came in the early 80s. I didn't know anything about him. I just heard, at least, that he existed. I only met him at my father's funeral about six, seven years ago. And from that, we developed a relationship. Well, his father was my father's oldest brother, who was named Theo. But they didn't call him Theo. They called him Rooster. Now, why do they call a guy Rooster? Because he crows a lot? Or does he do what roosters do in the barnyard? And that's how... That was my oldest uncle. I met him on a couple of occasions when I was a kid. Well, my cousin, Freddie, who was named after our grandfather, who my dad, when he was 3 years old, my grandfather was killed on a boating accident or a water accident on the Chattahoochee River. So my dad hardly ever knew him, his own father, but Freddie was named for our grandfather. Well, Freddie was, quote, illegitimate, end quote. You know, those secrets in the family that people have. And I'm finding out that many families have those secrets. Do you know that when you talk about the racial climate of this country, that there are brothers and sisters across racial lines because people don't talk about it? Hello? Oh, yes. Alex Haley found that out when he was doing Roots. And trying to discover his roots, you see, because he wanted to know something about his family. Not just as he discovered the African side of it, but there was another side. And they had family reunions that come to find out, and boy, it was kind of salt and pepper, you know, because there are secrets in families. No question about it. We put it under the umbrella of black sheep in the family. Everybody has them. I have cousins throughout the country, some I've never seen because of the activity of the brothers within my family, or the brothers or the uncles within my family. I have a brother, a real brother, a half-brother, my father's son, who I could not even locate to tell him our father was dead. Still haven't found him. And he's a junior. Secrets in the family. So I'm just telling a little bit on my family. I could tell you more that might curl your hair, but that's enough to illustrate that if we think back in our own families, and sometimes we don't have to go back generations, not at all, to find black sheep in the family. But for the sake of our discussion today, let's go back to Father Abraham. And let us consider this man that we read about in the book of Hebrews as being a man of faith. And see what we discover, because we can find encouragement by what we see when we closely examine the lives of the individuals mentioned in this genealogy. We can't look at them all, but we can look at some of the big ones. Let's look at Abraham. Now, you may want to just refer or write down in your notes, but from Genesis 12 on, when we're introduced to Abraham, in that very first 12th chapter of when we find Abram being culled out of the pack, if you will, here's what we discover. We find him going to Egypt. Abraham. Abram is his name at the time. And he's taking his wife Sarai with him. And he tells her, now when we get to the land, tell them you're my sister. Liar, liar, pants on fire. He didn't do it just once. In the 20th chapter, he does it again to the king of Gerar, the Philistines' location, Abimelech. Twice he does it. Each time, the individual Pharaoh finds out, in his instance, says, well, why did you put me in this position of telling me she's your sister? Because I was going to, somebody might have taken her and lain with her. I might have done that. And in the case of Abimelech, God comes to him in a vision and tells him, don't you touch that man's wife. Telling you that the commandments were in existence before Sinai about adultery. That's an interesting little note. But beyond that, Abraham lied. Oh, yes, he did. Bearing false witness, and his intent was to deceive. That was his intent, this faithful man, Abraham. Now, we all have liars in the family, don't we? And maybe we might have had one slip out of our mouths over time. This is not to demean Abraham, because, oh yeah, he's the father of the faithful, no question about it. But the point is that you are taken through trials before you come out on the other side. You should never write someone out simply because they're on the dark side. Now, that means that if you know somebody on crack today, or some woman who has sold her body, or maybe has had two or three kids out of wedlock, you don't write anybody off on the backside or the dark side of life. You don't have the right, because you don't know what God is doing. If we had seen Abraham lying like a rug, and he could be on Geraldo, some of us would conclude he ain't worth nothing. But the book of Hebrews tells us otherwise, doesn't it? Not only the book of Hebrews, Genesis tells us of what Abraham went through. So he lied twice. Well, but the real deal comes to in the 16th chapter of Genesis. Oh, yeah. You see, Abraham looked at things in human terms, and God had to bring him back to God's reality and God's terms. God kept appearing to Abraham and saying, you know, I'm going to make of you a nation, an individual that produces many nations. In fact, your children are going to be like the stars of heaven. They're going to be like the sands of the sea, so numerous. They won't be able to be numbered. And Abraham looking around and saying, well, I don't know how he's going to do that. In fact, in the 16th chapter, let's just turn to Genesis 16. Because we often think of Sarah in this negative light, but we can't put it all on Sarah. No, because Father Abraham had a little problem too. Let's see. Actually, chapter 17 and verse 17. This comes after Abraham does a human thing. We'll talk about that in a moment. But in chapter 17 and verse 17, after God told him, I'm going to bless you and bless Sarah, indeed I will give you a son in verse 16 by her, then I will bless her and she shall be a mother of nations, kings of people shall come from her. Abraham fell on his face and laughed. Now we know that Sarah laughed in chapter 18, but Abraham laughed too. So what do they name Isaac? Laugher, laughing. That's what Isaac means, laughing. And God has this thing about naming things what they are. Well, he couldn't believe it in verse 18, and God said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. Well, Ishmael, yeah, that was a son of Abraham. Now, how did he come to be the son of Abraham? We're going to talk about black sheep in the family. Turn to chapter 16 and just look at it as I tell the story. You know the story, don't you? Sarai says, well, and this was a tradition of the time, we talk about surrogate parenthood like it's a new thing. There's nothing new under the sun. You know, you may have a different mechanism by which it's accomplished, but there's nothing new. And so what do we see here? Sarai says to Abram, you know, I'm a barren, and it doesn't look like what God promised is going to happen. So why don't you take my handmaiden here, Hagar, and will have children by her. She will be the surrogate parent. No petri dish, you know, test tube baby, just the good old-fashioned way. And I can see Abraham walking around saying, well, if I must, I must. If I just have to keep peace in the house, I guess I must. You think he was looking at it spiritually? Oh, no. No. Because look at what happens as a result of him doing that. Look at the result. When Hagar has conceived, says in verse 4 of chapter 16, her mistress, Sarai, despised her in her sight. Now, why would she despise Hagar? Poor slave Hagar. Was it that maybe Hagar was strutting around with her belly poking out, kind of having a little smirk, kind of a Mona Lisa smile, you know, rubbing it in on Sarai? Would human beings do that? Yes, they would. You betcha. And so in verse 6 it says, and Sarai says to Abram, may the wrong done me by, done me by upon you, be upon you, that is. Abram. He wasn't looking at it spiritually. I gave my maid into your arms, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. That is, Hagar despised me. May the Lord judge between you and me, Abraham, for doing that. At Sarai's suggestion. Talking about black sheep in the family. Oh, it gets worse. It goes on. And sometimes when we talk about the identity of Israel and we bathe in all of that and think, oh man, this is just great news and great knowledge. We don't want to look at the dark side of the family and how it all came to be and how God used it all to bring it to a point. And I have a point to be made about that later. Well, Ishmael, Hagar goes off into the desert and an angel comes and brings her back in verse 11 and tells her that his name is going to be Ishmael, that is, God hears, because she was bemoaning her fate, what's going to happen. A promise is made that he will be, in verse 12, a donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and so forth. I'll just sum it up by saying that Ishmael was promised to be a 12-tribe nation, too, by God. Mm-hmm. And when we take a look at the Middle East today, what do we see? We see the children of Abraham killing one another, because both sides claim Abraham is their father. You're talking about the residuals of black sheep in the family? Boy, can they ever last? Yeah, they can last a long time, even in our human existence. Well, by the way, in verse 16, Abram was 86 when Hagar bore him Ishmael, which tells you that when Isaac was born, Abraham was 100, and therefore Ishmael was 14 when Isaac was born. Which sets up a whole other scenario of Ishmael picking at the little kid. Because I'm the firstborn. And automatically, the birthright always goes to the firstborn. Doesn't it? Not always. We'll see that as we go on. So you can see, laying the foundation with Abraham, some interesting things. Abraham laughed. Sarah laughed. You see, faith and faithfulness is established by testing and trial. And this was a test. Abraham was put to the test because he was told by God, this is what's going to happen, and he tried to move it along a little bit and messed up everything. Set up the dichotomy in the family as a result of his actions. So we could take a look at Abraham, and then we could look at Isaac too, because when Abraham was about to die, and just briefly I'll touch on Isaac because, you know, Isaac is the kind of guy, the Bible doesn't write a lot about him, but the fact is that Abraham wanted his son to marry someone from his kin. He didn't want him to marry somebody around the territory where he was, where the Philistines and other nationalities existed. Some like to make that out to be a racial deal, but I don't think it was. We'll find out why I don't think that in a moment. It wasn't that at all, but he wanted him to marry a kinsman. So he sends his servant over to where his kinsman lived, Abraham did, with camel and gold and lots of stuff. I mean, like a neon sign saying, money. Show me the money. Where's the money? And so here the servant shows up and he's out watering the camel and so forth with permission, and Rebekah comes down, and Laban, her brother, comes down too, and he sizes up the situation and says, "Ooh, Rebekah, don't you want to go and marry this guy, sight unseen?" You know, there are people who have preached, friends of mine who have preached this subject and wanted to make a great romance out of Rebekah and Isaac. The greatest romance of all time. Please, give me a break. Sight unseen? No, wasn't no romance. It was a business deal. Laban says, "You ought to go and marry this woman, not this guy, Rebekah. I mean, look at all the gold and stuff that he's spreading around here." How do you know that Laban was penurious and wanted a lot of money? Well, later on, when Jacob goes over and works for him, you see that. Money grubbing. You know, got to get paid. Show me the money. That's Laban. We'll call him that. Now, Isaac marries Rebekah, and they have two sons, twins, Esau and Jacob. Now the plot thickens when we talk about black sheep in the family, right? So from Genesis 25 through 37, we can look at the life of Jacob and see nothing but a mess. First of all, he tricks his brother out of the birthright, because his brother Esau doesn't regard it. You can read that in chapter 26. Then he tricks his father out of the blessing. He gets the birthright from Esau, the blessing from Isaac. Really ticks off Esau, to where Jacob has got to run away for 20 years. 20 years he goes and lives with Laban, his uncle. Works for him. Makes money. Makes Laban even more wealthy. Has 13 children in those 20 years. One daughter named Diane. Most people don't know. You remember Diane. She did a crazy thing, went over into town to entice some people, caused some problems. Remember that? Where Simeon and Levi, her brothers, went in and slaughtered all the guys after he had them circumcised. Simeon and Levi, priesthood. Black sheep in the family. My, oh, my. Well, lots of stuff in this book. Lots of stuff when you just take a look at it for real and look at it through the way God intends for us to evaluate it. But let's take a look at Jacob for a moment. You see, when he was born and the twins come out, God made a promise that the younger would be over the elder. Well, Esau comes out, and who's grabbing onto his heel? Jacob. Jacob's grabbing onto his heel, and that's why he was named Jacob, which means supplanter or backstabber, if you will. That's what he was named, because that's how he operated. Look at how he operates, and Rebekah is in on it. Here's how you trick your daddy to get the blessing. Fix him some of this food that he likes to eat. You know, that wild venison stew that he likes. Fix it for him. Oh, by the way, and you put some kind of hairy garment on so that he's blind, you know. And so he will think that you're Esau. And what did Isaac say? "You sound like Jacob, but you feel like Esau." Black sheep in the family. I mean, you can't miss it, folks. You cannot miss it when you consider the magnitude of what God is doing and has done, and whom he chooses. People that we wouldn't give the time of day to.
That concludes the recording of Side A. Please flip over now to Side B to continue listening.
We recall that maybe in our own families are some of these kinds of people. Well, I could spend more time on Jacob and Esau, but you can read it for yourself in those chapters from 25 to 27. I want to get up to the one to whom the scepter was designated, Judah. You see, they're all in that lineage in Matthew, the first chapter. See, I'm going to pass by Reuben, firstborn, who doesn't get the birthright. I'm going to pass by Reuben. And I got to pass by Simeon and Levi to come to Judah, because Judah, it says in the prophecy of Genesis 48, that the scepter would never depart, or the rulership would never depart from Judah. Judah. Now that's a pair, or one guy to draw to, an ace to draw to, chapter 38. Have you ever read chapter 38? And figured out something about this black sheep in the family? It says back in the Genesis account, if you will recall, it says, Judah had two sons. They were twins too, Perez and Zerah. All right? And it says there, by Tamar. Well, who was Tamar? Chapter 38 tells you. She was his daughter-in-law. Didn't you know that? Oh, yeah. You see, her husband, Judah's son, died. Judah made a promise to Tamar that when the younger son, and you know the scriptures tell us that if a woman is left a widow, the next of kin, in this case a brother, should marry and raise up seed to his brother who's deceased. Right? Okay. So the promise by Judah was that, well, when this younger son grows up, I will give him to you as your husband, and you can go on and be out of your widowhood and be out of your time of mourning and all of that. Well, Tamar saw that Judah was not a man of his word because as this young man grew up, and Judah just forgot his promise. So she found out that he was going to be down there where they had the sheep. And she dressed up, got out of her clothes of mourning, dressed up as a lady of the evening with her face veiled, and went down and played the harlot. And along comes Judah. Judah, from whom the scepter would never depart. Doesn't the scripture say, isn't it evident that our Lord sprang from Judah? Black sheep in the family. Because when he gets down there, he sees this woman parading around, and he enters into a negotiation with her. What will you give me, she says, to, quote, sleep with you, end quote. Well, I'll give you a lamb, but I don't have it with me right now. Well, what kind of token will you give me, she asks. He gives to her some kind of a staff and an insignia, and says, you can redeem this for this promise that I made to you. And of course they go about their business. The time goes by. Judah goes home. Tamar goes home. And then she finds out she's pregnant. She is conceived from that situation. People come to Judah and say, Judah, your daughter-in-law has played the harlot. And just like a lot of righteous people, stand back on his heels, Judah does, and says, let's burn her. So they bring Tamar to him, and he asks her some questions. And she presents the things that he had given to her and says, this child belongs to whomever these belong to. Judah's response to her was, you are more righteous than I. You are more righteous than I, for I have not fulfilled the promise I made to give that son to you as husband. That's Judah. These are in the scriptures, folks. I'm not reading it verse by verse, and perhaps you might think it may take some license. Not really. The reality is, this is the way it is. This was the way it was. Furthermore, you'll want to note from 1 Chronicles, the 5th chapter, verses 1 and 2, an important point there. 1 Chronicles, let's turn over to that, for it describes for us a phenomenon in the issue of the birthright not always going to the firstborn. It says here in chapter 5 of 1 Chronicles, I have 2 Chronicles, wait a minute. 2 Chronicles 5 and verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, Reuben did what? Yeah, you see, Reuben went out and slept with his father's concubine. That was Reuben. Jacob described him as unstable as water when you read in Genesis 48. But right here, it gives a reason why the birthright didn't go to him. His birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright. And verse 2 it says, though Judah prevailed over his brothers and from him came the leader, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. In other words, the kingship came through Judah, but the birthright came through Joseph. Reuben, the firstborn, was passed over. Simon, Simeon, and Levi were passed over to get to Judah and to get to Joseph. Ishmael was passed over. Esau was passed over in the birthright lineage because of black sheep in the family, if you see. So it's very clear, very powerful, awe-inspiring when you really get down to it to consider these things. Now, I could look at several issues here. Let's turn back to the first chapter of Matthew. Verse first chapter of Matthew to consider a couple of things here. Now, we've looked at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We've mentioned Judah. We've mentioned Joseph to some degree. We go into a lot about him. But I want to get down to verse 5 here to show you how God works. Remember the one thing that God told Abram to do back in chapter 12? To leave your family, leave your country, go to a land where you don't know where you're going, but I'll show you the way, and I'll protect you. Well, Abram didn't believe that God would protect him. That's why he lied to Pharaoh and to Abimelech, because he didn't believe God was going to protect him. All right. And God worked it all out and brought him to a point in his life. But beyond that, he took a family member with him, Lot. Remember that. God says, leave your family. And so here comes Lot. And you know right away they had problems with their herdsmen fighting and squabbling. So Abraham finally says, you pick out which way you want to go, and I'll go the opposite direction. And so Lot chose the green pasture, the land over there where Sodom and Gomorrah was, and Abraham just went in the other direction so there'd be peace in the family. Have you ever had that? Where you had to decide, look, I'll see you at the family reunions. That's about the only time I really want to talk to you. Anybody relate to that at all? Okay. Now, we know Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, that Lot was a leader in the town, and that eventually he had to be carried out of Sodom and Gomorrah by the angels because he was reluctant actually to leave. So when he gets out there and his wife is turned into a pillar of salt, his daughters thought that they would not raise up seed because to them the entire world was destroyed. And so they got their father, incest in the family, drunk, and had children. Each of them had a child, a son, by Lot, his daughters. This is in the book. Their names, Ammon and Moab. Moab. Ruth was a Moabitess. Read the book of Ruth. And how God brought the Moabites from Lot and brought them back into a relationship with the Israelites or the descendants of Abraham by Ruth marrying Boaz. But that's getting ahead of the story. Verse 5. Of Salmon was born Boaz. Boaz married Ruth. Boaz's parents were Salmon and Rahab. Rahab the harlot. Anybody ever watched the Pastor Murray guy from Gavette, Arkansas? You don't know what I'm talking about. He sits at a desk and people write him questions and so forth. But you've never seen him. He's probably on some of the religious stations around, but he's a pretty popular guy, older man. And I've heard him talk about this thing of Rahab. You see, we like to glamorize the scriptures. We don't want to acknowledge that humanity existed within them. We don't want to acknowledge that there may have been some black sheep in the family. I don't know why we do that, because it's all very plain, plainly there. So he says of Rahab, well, she wasn't really a harlot. Scriptures say that, but that's not what she was. She was, some of the margins have an innkeeper. They call them bordellos, I think, in Europe. She was an innkeeper. Now, they didn't have red lights like we have lights today. She had a red cord that she would hang out her window. And the spies happened to show up at her house, explained their mission. She hid them and even lied to the king's servants when they came to the house and says, have you seen them? Well, they went that way. They haven't been here, while they were on the roof all the time. So she got a promise for them that her family would be spared when the Israelites came through. She says, I've heard about you. We've heard about you coming. But can you spare my life? We find her name in the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter. How did she get there? She had to show herself faithful. She had to be reliable, and she protected the lives of those spies who came into the land. And as a result of it, she finds her way into the genealogy of Jesus Christ. She dwelt in Jericho, which means she was not an Israelite. Hello. No, she wasn't. I could go back and talk about Joseph marrying the Egyptian, but there again, people like to dance around that and say, well, you know, the Egyptians were kind of fair-skinned. No, not all of them. No, no, I'm not buying that. No, you see, Egypt was like a cosmopolitan. What continent is it in? Africa? Oh, okay. So people avoid some issues because we want this thing to be so pure. You cannot go through the lineage of Jesus Christ and find all of that. You find Rahab. You find a Moabitess. And when I've made these presentations before, even some of my ministerial friends have a little problem because, you know, Moabites, they were kind of the same line. They were kind of Israelite. No, they were never Israelites. Abraham was not an Israelite. Was he? Israel didn't come into existence or the name until God changed Jacob's name. And his name was changed to describe a particular feature, from supplanter or backstabber to one who overcomes as God overcomes. So, however you deal with that, as we look here in this genealogy, Rahab bears Boaz. Boaz marries Ruth, and from that we get Obed, and from that we get Jesse, and finally we're at David. Do I have time to spend on David? Are we pretty much up to speed on the black sheep in the family there? Well, it just says it right here very clearly. And to David in verse 6 was born Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Oh my. And God kept on picking these people, choosing them. I was explaining to a man the other day, there were people in the first century church who had a problem with Paul. Never trusted him. Never did. Didn't believe the miracle that he had been converted. Why? Because they had lost family members to the actions of Saul. They had been in prison. And I suppose Stephen must have had some relatives who were in mourning for him being stoned to death and who was standing there holding the coats, consenting to his death. Saul, who became the Apostle Paul. Oh, we hold grudges. Oh, we ostracize people into the dark side of life because they make mistakes, as if we are just pure and clean, that we don't have any black sheep in our family. That is ridiculous. Because in the family of Jesus Christ, I mean his physical ancestry, look at what we see. And yet it changes nothing about what God was doing. Yep, secrets of sin. They had so many secrets in their family that by the time Solomon's son takes over Rehoboam, he has the attitude, you think, well, he's the son of Solomon and the grandson of David. Surely he must have had more wisdom than that to tell them that my father chastised you with whips, I'm going to chastise you with scorpions. That's like Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake. And the whole nation split apart because of Rehoboam. And from time to time, you would have renewal and a repentance would sweep over the nation because of the leadership of someone like Josiah. Or some other king would come into prominence and cause the nation to repent and turn around. But it got so bad in the nation of Israel that they had to be carried away into captivity because of their sins. Black sheep in the family. So by the time we come through this whole exercise of the generations between the captivity and Jesus Christ, we come up to verse 16. And to Jacob was born Joseph, the husband of Mary, by whom was born Jesus, who is called the Anointed One. Verse 17 says, therefore all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David to the deportation or the captivity to Babylon, 14 generations. And from the captivity to Babylon to the time of Christ, 14 generations. 42 generations, and finally, we have arrived at someone promised so long ago to qualify to save God's people. Jesus Christ of Nazareth. And the story doesn't stop there. Because can you imagine what people were saying? What were they saying about Tamar? Judah, your daughter-in-law done played the harlot down there and messing around and she then got herself pregnant, or as we would say, And I hope that this doesn't be, is not offensive, knocked up. What do you think they were saying about Mary? What if your daughter came to you and says, God did it? How would you respond? Impossible. Are you kidding? Girl, you better go somewhere and get on your knees and pray. Because nobody would believe that. Not even Joseph. Verse 19. Well, let's begin in verse 18. Now, the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. When his mother Mary had been betrothed, that was intended to be formally married to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child by the Holy Spirit. God did it. Joseph's reaction was just like everybody else's, except Joseph was a righteous man, it says here. Joseph, her husband, being a righteous man and not wanting to disgrace her, desired to put her away secretly or privately. We won't talk about it. We won't broadcast. I mean, I'm within my rights to take you out and have you stoned, Joseph could have said. But he didn't. Which tells you that God was in the selecting business of not only choosing Mary, a virgin in Israel at about 14 or 15 years of age, but also the individual who would be the prime male influence in the life of his son on the earth, Joseph. So an angel appears to him in verse 20 while he was dreaming and says, Joseph, son of David, be not afraid to take Mary as your wife, for that which has been conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. And she will bear a son, and she shall call his name Jesus, for it is he who will save his people from their sins. Sins? Sins in the family? Black sheep in the family going all the way back to Abraham. And if you read the genealogy in the book of Luke in the third chapter, it goes all the way back to Adam. So how do we get off thinking that it's that other guy's family? And you see, because the Bible describes us as heirs and joint heirs with Christ in Romans 8, doesn't it? And if we are heir and joint heirs, that means we are in the family. So why is it that we get so pompous and so high-minded and lifted up, even when we look at situations in the world? It's awful, the things we see. No question about it. OJ did or didn't, I don't know. We like to think we know. And I suppose we could lean very easily and say, yeah, he did it. And ain't he a terrible person? His mother's not. Kind of a nice lady, I think. But there are black sheep in the family. I haven't told you all of my family. I had an uncle. I'll tell you about him. A great uncle. Numbers man, illegal, you know, kind of underground deal. Down in Columbus, Georgia, he had some women working for him, too. That was my grandmother's brother. Finally got arrested one day, and cops came in and took all of his money. He kept money in the trunk. Money never showed up again. But he was doing illegal stuff, and so the money can disappear and things like that. I named my oldest daughter, her middle name is Lee, after my mother's aunt, my grandmother's sister. She died of a social disease. Very sad death, my mother tells me. And that's part of my family. What about you? What about Jesus Christ of Nazareth? Who's in his family? What you will learn as you take a look at this, and look at it very carefully, despite all the rumors that existed and all the jokes that the Jews even tell today about Christ and Mary, and even at the time of Christ himself, he heard stuff about himself. They called him a wine bibber. They even called him illegitimate. We be not born of fornication, said the Pharisees. We are of our father Abraham. Remember that? Well, who was their daddy Abraham? Have we looked at him close enough? We want to look at him a little more closely and understand that he had to go through tests and trials in order to prove to God what he was all about. Because in God's selection process, God did not abandon his mission of salvation because members of the family messed up. I'll repeat that. God never abandoned his mission of salvation because members of the family messed up. And so God will not abandon us. He will not let us go. He will not discard us. We can walk away. But as we read through this story of black sheep in the family, can we not conclude that God will never leave us nor forsake us? Abraham had trouble believing God until he went through some stuff. He had to go through some stuff. God says, leave your family. He took Lot. God says, you will have children. He laughed. God says, I'll protect you. Abraham lied. And you can go through the lives of all of those individuals and see their humanity, their failings and their shortcomings. So when you read Hebrews 11 of their faithfulness, do not disregard how they got there. Because if they could make it and receive the promise and wait for the time that it's given, what about us? What will separate us from that love of God? Paul asked. What will separate us? Somebody else's sin? I have a real problem, and it's on this tape and it'll go out. I have a problem meeting with folk who claim to love me, but don't want to meet with me because of something somebody else did. I have a problem with that. Because if you love me, you ought to show some sign. So there are things to consider, brethren, and how we apply to ourselves the reality that's in God. Oh yeah, we all have black sheep in the family. All of us can tell stories. We can all examine it very carefully. But the most important family of all time, the one that produced the Savior of mankind. Wow, what a family. What an exercise. What an experience to go through that family. Can you imagine yourself back in that time? I tried to think about the 12 boys, you know, and figure out which one I'd been like. Oh, by the way, I did mention, didn't I, that Joseph married an Egyptian? I did mention that, didn't I? And that his sons were half Egyptian. Ephraim and that. Did I mention that? So I'm guessing I could be in the family. You see what I'm saying? Because if we just leave it to the Europeans to be those that comprise Israel, we are ignoring the scriptures. And it's hard because I look at it because of who I am, because of my origins. And then it's understandable that someone of European ancestry would look at it a different way. All I'm saying is that it's a bigger story than simply Europe. Because God promised that your seed, Abraham, will be like the sands on the seashore. Can you number them? Like the stars of heaven. Can you number them? So I guess we could just sum it up by saying, whether there be black sheep in the family or not, it's all in the family.
Thank you for listening to this cassette tape of the Church of God International. Feel free to contact us with any additional literature or tape request at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710, or call 903-825-2525, or email us at armorofgod@email.com. Thank you.